Well, my name is Danilo, and I'm part of CHU. I'm 31 years old, and part of CHU collectives in São Paulo, Brazil. One is named Casa Mafalda. It's like a social center, similar to Chuloligo, but not. We also have space for children, but we have much more things for adults, like debates, gigs, exhibitions, study groups. We have now a small garden where we plant some things. We are starting this internet anarchist coffee also on the garage. So it's a social center that exists for 3 years now and is getting more organized and more and bigger. And I'm also part of Rosa Negra. Rosa Negra is a mixed gender football team. We always play mixed gender. It's also an anti-capitalist football team and is also a direct action collective. So we use football actually to do direct action, like playing demonstrations, playing favelas, and trying to bring political discussions about how things are, how the problems to people. And on this issue of this football as direct action, I brought here this small pamphlet. I don't know, it's not a pamphlet. Like one guy from Autonomous Football Club, that's the team I used to play in São Paulo, and another guy from Antira and anti-fascist team from England. They made photos of alternative football around the world, and they put it together in this small exhibition. So I will pass you if you want to look around. The idea of this presentation is to talk about the legacy of the World Cup for people in Brazil, but I'm going to be much more centered in São Paulo and Rio, because São Paulo is my hometown and Rio is like the nearest city and the city that will still host the Olympic Games, so the things are still going on there. But I also have some information about other places I'm going to sometimes talk about, but I have much more information about São Paulo and Rio. To start, this is a map of Brazil. I am also a geographer, so I like maps a lot. So there's a lot of maps on this presentation. If there is too much, you can send me to fuck off. This is a map of Brazil, and Brazil had this. All these cities are the cities where we had games for the World Cup. In football terms, like south, like all this south region and this southeast region has the biggest teams, and already has a lot of stadiums. And they also, in not just football terms, but in like economical terms, they also had hold most of the power and the economic power of the country. So you probably read about that in media, that some stadiums like Manaus Stadium are in the middle of the forest. Until today, the only two ways to get to Manaus is by plane or by boat. There's no roads that really bring you there. And the stadium, they don't have any football team on the four divisions of national football in Brazil. And the governor already is talking about using the stadium, now the World Cup's over, as a prison. So you can imagine how useful is the stadium on this place. And it cost us almost 1 billion reais. São Paulo is the richest state of the country, also the most populous state. And São Paulo City, that's like this satellite image here, concentrates 12 million people. This is a little, like, it's like 7% of Brazil population. The purple spots are where we have more concrete and buildings. The green spots are where we have like green areas, so you can see that on the middle of the city there's almost no green areas. And there's a big concentration of people on downtown. And also, a lot of people live on the border, like especially on the east border. There is where the stadium, new stadium, was built. São Paulo has 1,500 square kilometers for 12 million people. Vienna, in comparison, has one third of the size. I think 400 something square kilometers. And last time I saw, you had 1.8 million. So it's like almost 10 times less population for 3 times less space. So you can imagine how crowded São Paulo is, you know. Take Vienna area and multiply for 3, but take the population and multiply for 10. So it's really, really crowded city. and has all the urban problems all the crowded cities of the world has. If you get together São Paulo with the 27 cities around, we had what we call like the Great São Paulo, the metropolitan area of São Paulo that hosts 31 million people. And if you have together this metropolitan area with the other metropolitan areas around, we gather 31 million people, was about 15% of Brazil population. So in this spot of the country, you concentrate 15% of the population. In the whole state, you concentrate 40 million, is 20% of the population. So you can imagine that just this state holds 20% of all the country's population. So just to have an idea of how concentrated economy, politics, and misery and poverty, all the problems of the country are in São Paulo. This another map of the city shows a little bit more about this concentration. This, I don't know until now, this is the sixth city I do this talk, and I still don't know how to translate this sheet, IDH. In Portuguese, translating for English, literally it will be Human Development Index. This thing that UN uses from 0 to 1 to show how good life is in one place. Like they use life expectancy, scolarity, buying power, and don't remember the other thing. And on the green area here in São Paulo, in the middle of the city, we have this index similar to Europe, not to Scandinavia, but to Germany or even Austria. And on the yellow areas on the border, we have this index similar to Africa. Not to the poorest areas of Africa, but to still poor areas of Africa. So this can show like how much money and economy are concentrated in downtown. And also, these purple spots are all the favelas of the city. From 12 million people, São Paulo has over 5 million of people living in favelas or precarious houses. What means houses without water or without electricity or without like some of the basic services you need in your house. So this is a city with a big segregation between rich and poor, and rich in the middle and poor in the borders, and favelas everywhere, like, as you can see. On this city, government has something they call urban operations. There are state interventions on the space to change the destination of the land and the use of the land on these places. So São Paulo has these four big urban operations. The two that matters most for us on this talk is this on east side of the city. As you can remember from the last slide, last photo, here is a poor area, and there's the big urban operation. And this is a strategic place. If you go above this, here in Guarulhos, another city, is the international airport of the city. Actually, the international airport of São Paulo is not in São Paulo. And if you go down, you are going to Santos. That's the biggest port on South America and where all the production goes to be exported. So this area is like strategical to bring people and money from airport area to port area. So that's why it's an urban operation here. And by urban operation, it means taking out all the favelas and gentrificate all this space and turn this space in like residential commercial areas with big avenues that brings you from the airport to Santos. This is another area on the south area of the city. It's near here, somewhere here we have like São Paulo City Airport. And this area is like also another urban operation where the government want to create this subway line that brings you from the airport to this place where the biggest city stadium is Morumbi. It's a private stadium from São Paulo Football Club. And we already have on the city at least four big stadiums. Morumbi is here, then we have Palmeiras Stadium here, the City Stadium here, and Portuguesa Stadium here. So this is a city that already has four stadiums, and at least two of them could be used for the World Cup. And actually, Morumbi was the stadium for the World Cup until 2009, when the government changed idea and wanted use this World Cup excuse to put this urban operation on the east side of the city on. Even changing the stadium changing the stadium for the World Cup, the south area of the city is still suffered with the World Cup because the subway line are still being constructed because this is a strategic area. It's one of the richest land value of the city, and it connects the airport area to the hotel area of the city, one of the hotel areas. So it's like the idea is to eliminate favelas from here, to create this corridor between the airport and the hotel site, the hotel area, and even like with the World Cup not having anything here, they still continue doing that. The other urban operation that has importance to this talk is like Nova Luz here. Luz is an old neighborhood in the middle of downtown, where today is like a poor neighborhood. And for 20 years now, São Paulo government state, not the city state, but government state, sorry, not the city government, but the state government, is trying to gentrify this area, to take all the homeless people, all the drug addicts, all the favelas from here, and make this downtown this touristic point, the same way they did to Paris, London, and all the old cities. So, and still, here, there's a lot of resistance, because the housing movement of São Paulo is really strong, and they use this strategy of occupying buildings and land on downtown to say to the government, we don't want to be, we don't want to, we don't need a house far away from downtown. We need a house where the job is, where the schools are, where the hospital are, where all the access, all the services of the city are. So there's no use to building houses on the border of the city. We want to live in downtown. And in this area, we have a lot of abandoned buildings because the owners like have like 20 million reais debts in taxes for the government, and they just abandoned the building. So there's a lot of occupations here in this area. This is a map that put together the favelas with the urban operations. And as you can see, almost all urban operations are exactly where the favelas are. This is, not, of course, no coincidence. This is a capitalist plan to wipe out the good areas, like speculate with the land and transform these places in gentrificated places. This district, like if you see here, there's at least three favelas. Actually, there are more. This map is old. Is Itaquera. This is the district where the new stadium was built. It has 15 square kilometers and hosts 220,000 people. So it's a lot of people, and it's a historical working class migrant from northeast of Brazil district. From now 10 years at least, this district is like subject of this gentrification process, and the stadium just accelerated that very, very much with the expulsion of a lot of people from here to far away. This is a closest view of this urban operation and the stadium area. This is the stadium area. All the red spots are favelas. And from these five favelas, the only one that didn't got evicted is this Favela da Paz. And we consider that one of the biggest victories we had on the World Cup. Why? This is just 800 meters from the stadium. And by the year of 2011, the housing movements of the city got together. They always got together every 2 years to talk about the situation of housing. And they started one thing that's like the popular committee for the World Cup. This popular committee exists in all the 12 cities where the World Cup happened, and they articulate themselves in the national articulation of the popular committees for the World Cup. Both collectives and part are like members of this popular committee. This popular committee is actually a coalition of social movements, basically a lot of housing movements, some street vendors, movements, feminist movements, students. And it's became bigger now. Actually, this year became a lot bigger and is continue growing. Together with the popular committee, the inhabitants of this favela, we made together this alternative plan for urbanization of this area. So the government say that they have to go because they are just on the margins of this river, and this is an environmental problem, and because of the World Cup. We said, okay, you can do this urbanization of this area without getting these people out. At least 70% of them can stay if you build popular houses to them here. Why just rich people have the right to live on the margin of a river? Why the poor people doesn't have this right? And we did this plan together with this architecture office, and we delivered it to the government to prove that it was possible to do that. And even much more cheaper than the project the government has. And of course, they never gave any answer. But this put this favela on focus of media, and this obligated the mayor to sign this contract saying they're gonna be evicted just when the new houses for them are built, and these new houses has to be around this area. We searched this area and we found 17 empty lands around this place, and the government said there was not possible to resettle them on this area because there was no open space, and we found 17 open spaces, you know. Then they managed to get this, and this is one of the biggest demands of the housing movements. They call that a key for a key. So like, I give you the key of my house and you can demolish it. When you give me, just on the same moment you give the key, give me the key of my new house. So on this favela, this was a struggle and a victory. Of course, this victory, this thing still has to be looked for, watched for, because until the new houses are built, we can expect everything for the government. They can just go back if they want. So we're still struggling with these people. And then this is a photo of the favela. As you can see, it's like just under this viaduct. That's like subway viaduct. This is the other urban area, urban operation on the south part of the city. And here we are also had a victory. All these red spots are like communities that the government wanted to evict. And the two first communities, they really evicted. But by the organization of a struggle of these two communities, the other, if I'm not wrong, 9 communities around managed to struggle, and they got in justice the right to stay there. Why they got the right to stay there? Simply because they are there for 60 years. Not 16, 60. These people has not, it's not like a proper favelas. These are like poor neighborhoods. They have like cement houses, they have legal water, legal electricity, and even this way the government say they pay all the taxes they have to pay, and even this way the government say this, they are illegal invaders. Like, they are 60 years now, illegal invaders. So they manage injustice to get, to guarantee they're gonna stay. But the two communities the government managed to evict suffered one thing that I can't call by another name, that not state terrorism. And this is one photo that shows really clearly why they want to evict these people. This is one big avenue on the with the big buildings, where the land value of the land was one of the most valuable, most higher prices of the land of the city. This other avenue connects this important avenue to the airport that will be like to this direction. And in the middle of that, you have a lot of poor neighborhoods that was grown by favelas, you know. This is not favelas, this is poor neighborhood, but was favelas some decades before. Here is one of the communities that got evicted, and you see the structure was already working for the subway line. And this is why I call this state terrorism. How the state deal with these people? They don't go to the community and offer one thing to everybody. They go family by family. And then you like, some of the families are in really bad financial conditions. So the government go there and offer them like 10% of the real value of the house. And they accept that because it's still a lot of money. Let's say that this house, it's worth like 800,000 reais, and they offer to these people 80,000 reais. And they accept because 80,000 is a lot of money. They have no money. They have a lot of debts. So they accept that, take this money. Normally they go live like 70 kilometers away, because there is there where they're gonna find another thing to buy with 80,000 reais. And then the government didn't like demolish the house. They go and just do a hole on the roof. They take the stair away, demolish some walls inside, just to make this place impossible to live for any people. So nobody can occupy this place. And as just aside, you have houses there where there are still people living. So you create an environment to people that's like a shit environment with like semi-demolished houses aside of houses, still people living with kids and everything. So you have a lot of diseases, you know, like rats, cockroaches. You have a perfect space at night to drug dealing, to rape, all the violence you can imagine a urban city with 12 million people can pass through. And this is a way of making pressure on the rest of the people to move, you know, to accept the deal the government is offering, even when this deal is very, very, very bad or much less than the real value of the house. This to me is state terrorism. I don't have another name to call that, you know. And this is like not the only state terrorism they made. There's a lot of them. There's this worse, you know. Sometimes they just go there, they do a mark on their house, on the house they're going to demolish, and say to the people, okay, you have 48 hours to get out. If you don't get out, you're going to demolish things with you inside. So this is a process that, of course, is not not a process that is derivative from the World Cup. We always had that, but the World Cup made it very worse. That's why we said on the Popular Committee, we have this article we wrote that says it didn't start in 2013, and you're not gonna, and it's not gonna end in 2014, because we know that these struggles are historical, and the World Cup is just one moment wherein these struggles are more intensificated, more like in focus. But this, I wish that the World Cup was the last thing we have, the last frontier of the capital to fight against. Unfortunately, it's not. Changing cities a little bit. This is Rio. This is the south area of the city. It's the rich area. This is where Ipanema, Copacabana, Leblon, all these beautiful beaches are. This is the north area of the city. This is the governor. It's called like Governor's Island. It's where the airport is. And this big pink thing is the west area. West and north are poor areas. The south is rich area. And that's why if you look for a map of Rio in Google, you're going to find this. Just the south zone. The rest didn't exist. Doesn't exist. Simply doesn't exist. You see like here, it's like empty area. Doesn't exist. As you can see, Maracanã is near the south zone, south area of the city, but it's like on the middle of the city. And in Rio, we have a big geographical difference for like rich and poor classes. North and west are really poor, but even in the south zone on these mountains here, there's a lot of favelas. So in São Paulo, the government was doing everything to take the people away and was saying this was not because of the World Cup, this was like urban operation. This has nothing to do with the World Cup, but of course it has. In Rio, it was the opposite. Everything the government did, they were saying, no, this is because of the World Cup. This is because of the World Cup, because of the Olympic Games. It's developing a better city. So it was the official excuse to everything to take people away was the World Cup. You can see here the 10 biggest working spots of Rio for World Cup and Olympic Games. And here on these flags are the 4 construction companies that are doing works in the city, are actually in the whole country for these events. And as you can see, the red flag is Odebrecht. It's from a company from Northeast. The owner is like, I don't know if his origins are German or Dutch, but I think it's Dutch, but I'm not sure. And it's really old company. And after the World Cup, it became the 4th richest construction company in the world. You can see here that they have from the 10 building spots of Rio, 10 biggest projects of Rio for World Cup and Olympic Games, they are present in 8. So you can call that mafia if you want. And you have like OAS and Andrade Gutierrez and Camargo Correa. All of them are the same shit, but the other branch is the biggest one. Really, really biggest one. And like these companies, these 4 companies are the companies that rule politics in Brazil. Why? All the presidential campaigns are private, private is sponsored. So the private companies give money to these campaigns. The companies that give the most amount of money are these construction companies, and they give to all the parties. This way they guarantee that doesn't matter which party is going to win the election, they're going to owe them a lot of favors. And that's why our supposedly left government, that's not left, not ever left, this is like social democracy in the lowest level it's possible. That's why they bring the World Cup and the Olympic Games to the country. You know, this is like attributing the favor of these companies paying the campaigns for them. 12 years of government of this party, and over the world you read that Brazil is getting better, developing, but there's developing for the rich people. For the poor people, you have like this, I don't know the word in English for that, social assistance money they give to poor people. For example, if you are poor, you have less than 1 minimum wage, and you give you maintain your kids on school, you get 80 reais for getting maintaining your kid on school. This is a very, very little money, but I can't say this is not important, because especially in Northeast or even in São Paulo, in poor neighborhoods where like women are really dependent of men, this brings to this woman a little independence, and this is very important because we are talking about a country that is the fourth biggest country in violence against women, in domestic violence. So it's important. This little money is important. The problem is, this is not a structural change. This is just social democracy. If the government change for a new government, right wing or neoliberal, they can easily take this assistance out, and then these poor people is gonna be back to total poverty. So that's why nobody likes this party anymore. This is a map that shows from where the communities, the people are getting evicted in Rio, and to where they're gonna be putted. You know, the only program of the federal government that is still near south zone is this. All the other, as you can see, is taking people from near the south zone or on the way from the airport to the south zone and bringing them to the west zone. So this is like segregating the city and trying to put people very far away from where the money and the jobs and the services and the beautiful beaches are. So these like round things are the biggest places for the World Cup and Olympic Games. So this makes really clear that this World Cup and these Olympic Games are a perfect excuse to wipe out poor people from the beautiful part of the city. This is Maracanã, or this was Maracanã, because they demolished and built another thing inside that's not Maracanã anymore. And these around are all things that were built in 2007 for the Pan American Games. Only 7 years later, this is already not good enough, and I have to reconstruct. This is like tennis courts. This is Maracanãzinho, it's like a gymnasium for volleyball and basketball. This is like an aquatic park where the biggest or the better aquatic sportists of Brazil train. And this is the Aldeia Maracanã. All of these, they tried to demolish. Actually, the Maracanãzinho, they tried to reform. This they got to demolish. The aquatic park, they fought it a lot, and I think they maintaining that. And the Aldeia Maracanã is an indigenous settlement. And what the indigenous people did was like occupying it and say, we're not going to leave, so you're not going to demolish this. But of course, like this was a lot of weeks of tension, and then with a lot of police. And then the government agreed in not demolishing it and transforming this in a museum of culture. But they took these indigenous away in the end anyway. But this was a struggle, and at least it claimed attention for the indigenous cause. And it was a partial victory to get the government not to demolish this thing, you know, because this museum of culture is going to have indigenous culture too, so it's like partial victory, you can call it maybe. The other important part of the popular committee of the World Cup are the street vendors. In a poor country as Brazil, and yes, we still are a poor country, where the average of unemployed people is 20%. Street commerce is really important to survive. So a lot of people work like this, selling things on the street. In the last city, São Paulo city government, they made this thing illegal. And the people have to go to the city hall and pay this tax to have this legality certificate. And from 138,000 street vendors we have in the city, only 1,000 and something have the certificate. So this was already illegal. With the World Cup, this became worse, because besides being illegal, you have this exclusion area, like 2 kilometers from the stadium, the fan zone, where only FIFA sponsors can sell stuff. So one of the fights of the popular committees were for these people have the right of selling stuff around the stadiums, the same right of McDonald's and Coca-Cola. It was not even an anarchist demand. It's just like, man, these people are not even fighting for proper jobs. They are fighting for the right of being a precarious worker that doesn't have any guarantee of nothing. So it's like a fight, a struggle to be the lowest level of work you can have in capitalist society. So just to see how violent is this process. And this is the biggest like street commerce street of São Paulo. This is like a normal day on Christmas. It's twice the number of people, and this is what they get. Like, so we have 3 types of police in Brazil: civil, military, and federal. The civil police is responsible for fiscalizing the streets, and they get the products of these people and they take away. And if they resist, they are arrested. And they take the products, and these people has to go to the city hall and pay this fine to get the products back. And of course, this fine is really high, so nobody takes the products back in the end. So this is like the state taking away jobs from people. Not even jobs, precarious jobs. Then, on this segregated and violent city, we have another problem that's really important, and that's what started the demonstrations last year. This is a map that shows the time you spend to go from the center of the city to other areas. So you can see, like, from here to here, that's where Itaquera is. You take, like, this is cut it down, but, okay. This is, like, 90 minutes to get here. And on the white spots, like, here, is over 2 hours. So you travel 1.5 hours just to go from Itaquera to downtown. So if you work here, and the most of the work are here, is here, you have to spend 3 hours of your day every day to go and go back. This without traffic. With traffic is much worse. So, beside that, one ticket to ride a bus or subway in São Paulo today is €1. This kind seems not expensive, but you can't go to your job or to your school, to your university, just with one bus. You have always to take 2 buses. At least when you live like far away, like on the border. So this may, on the second bus has a discount, so it's €1.5 to go. And €1.5 to go back home, so it's €3 by day, €15 a week, €60 a month. If you have in mind that the minimum wage in Brazil is €230, you spend 25% almost of your, no, 20% of your wage with transportation. So transportation is the basic right people need in São Paulo to have access to the city. So it should be free. Otherwise, you are like just saying to these people, you cannot use the city because you don't have money. So you cannot use the city. And in a city that half of the population, almost half, lives in favelas or precarious houses. So every year when the bus fare rises, people go to street to protest. Normally it's not so much people, like 3,000, 5,000, but last year it started to grow, and this movement, Passe Livre, that's a movement that has like an horizontal structure, and like they are like descendant from the anti-globalization movements on the beginning of the 2000s. The last year they managed to greater almost to 15,000 people on the streets. And the media, like after 3 demonstrations, the media was saying, okay, it's enough, these people are vandals, we can't take this anymore. Police, please do something. And police did. They beat a lot of people. 2 people, 1 journalist and 1 guy lost their sight of 1 eye because of rubber bullets. Over 200 got injured, over 100 got arrested. And this was like so violent that even the media, and this is like media structure in Brazil. In Brazil, just 11 families controls all the media of the country. And 4 groups, this means 4 groups. This is Folha, it's like the biggest newspaper. Estadão is second biggest. Abril is the biggest magazines company. And this is Globo, is the biggest media company of the country. There's a documentary about them in YouTube that's called Beyond Citizen Kane. Have to do with this famous movie Citizen Kane. And Global Power is so big in Brazil that this documentary remained forbidden in the country until the beginning of the 2000s. That they forbid the documentary to be exhibited in the country. So these 4 groups, they form the Millennium Institute. The Millennium Institute is theoretically an institute that sponsors campaigns for democracy and free speech and blah blah blah. But what they really do is sponsor everything that every campaign that's against their enemies. So now the government are their enemies because they lost power of this like supposedly left government. They lost power, but didn't lost money. So they control all the media, and they made all the media say these people are vandals and they are stopping the traffic every day. So please do that. And then when police did too much, exaggerated on the violence, they realized it, like, because Facebook was like full of photos and videos. They realized that they could use this police violence to redirect the demonstrations. So they made this image go viral and like be cover of all papers of the country. This is a policeman that not by coincidence is black, because Brazil is really racist country, doesn't matter what you heard. And these are like a middle class couple that was just having a beer on this bar that is like on Paulista Avenue. This is the postal card of the city. And they got beaten by police because of the demonstration. They were not on the demonstration, they were just having beer. So like police violence that's common every day on the poor neighborhoods went to downtown and happened over the middle class. And media tried to use that to say that these people, these young people, are the youthness of the country. They are on the street fighting for a better country and against the corruption of this bad, evil communist government. You know, they say that this government wants to make Brazil like Cuba. And I wish, I don't wish, but anyway. But then, like, this went viral. And the result of that was that on the next demonstration, this happened. In São Paulo, we got 200,000 people, and they were like holding every sign you can imagine. So they are demanding everything, like for this most stupid thing, like I want in PlayStation without taxes, or I want, really, I'm not kidding, or I want the dictatorship back because it was better. Two, like real demands like housing and free transportation and everything. And this like just took over all the city, stopped all the traffic. Like you could see like drivers like getting out of the cars and sitting on over the cars, like just waiting, you know. Say, okay, I'm gonna be here for hours, so let's get out of the car, you know. And they tried to invade the government palace, where like the football supporters are very important on this attempt. But the police let people do everything this day, everything they wanted, but not invade the government palace. In other cities, like Rio, 500,000 people, and they managed to invade the deputy's chamber of the city. In Brasilia, almost 100,000 people, and they invaded the Congress, and they danced on the roof, like as you can see. So this became like not more a demonstration because of the bus fare. Was it still like this movement Passe Livre was like put by us the leaders, and they are still very clear, like our fight is for free transportation. You know, we're not speaking against corruption, because this is like stupid. Who is in favor of corruption? Nobody's in favor. Like, this is like just empty demand that you can put anything inside. But people were like, this became like a popular riot, you know. So people were like going to the street and like demanding everything they never demanded in the whole Brazilian history. Like this, it was we never had this size of demonstrations in São Paulo or in all country. Not even under dictatorship. Not even like in 92 when people went to the street to get the president out. So this was like new. It's a new political atmosphere. And this demonstrations got a big victory, because the governments of all the cities, almost all the cities, had to go back and to take the bus rates off. So the bus rate remained in 1 euro. And at least 100 cities, none of them are big, but at least 100 cities, medium or small, they got free pass on the buses. So this was a civil population victory on a country that this never happened before. Never, never, never. Never made the government go back by going to the streets. So this is really new. And it ended, this struggle against the bus fare ended just 1 week for the Confederations Cup. So when the Confederations Cup started, the demonstration was like still hot, and they continued. Now, against the Confederations Cup, against FIFA, against the spending of money to do this World Cup. And this is a photo of the final in Maracanã, when we had 70,000 people in Maracanã watching Spain against Brazil, and 100,000 out protesting against. So in the football country, we had like more people out of the stadium protesting than inside. FIFA got really scared, really, really scared, because they tried to attack FIFA bus, and even the government got scared. And the president went to the media and made a lot of promises that, of course, after 1 month, everybody forgot, and is that. She say like the petroleum money is going to the education, and she will build I don't know how much new schools and blah blah blah. But this didn't keep people quiet, and in Rio, a new group emerged, the Black Blocs. Brazilian Black Blocs never existed. Okay, they existed. They were like 10, 15 people, anarchists. And of course, with 15 people, you can't do anything. And on these demonstrations, they mixed it. Like, they are there in 15, and like a lot of young people saw them and got interested, and suddenly this became like a massive thing. But it's not like in Europe. It's not anarchist people that are trying to destroy capital symbols or protect the demonstrators from the police. These are like anger youth guys, and a lot of girls too, that are just anger about everything. So they went to the demonstrations and start to clash and destroy everything. There was one day in São Paulo, they destroyed all this downtown. They destroyed everything. And this is what really became a popular riot. And this was perfect to the media, because now they could split and say, okay, we have the good demonstrations, there are demonstrators, they are fighting for a better place, better country, and we have the evil terrorist, anarchist black blocs. From the first time in my life, anarchism were being discussed in media, like, you know, even Global was talking about anarchism, and like, we got interviewed, man, it was like, crazy. And these black blocs start to do this in every demonstration, and media was trying to use them to attack the demonstration, like, and to justify police violence against all the demonstrations, and put like them against the good demonstrators, like, oh, the peaceful, beautiful people against the violent people, and try to destroy the demonstration. And they got it a little bit, because when Rio continued after the Confederations Cup with the demonstrations, this was like the teachers went on strike, and it was the biggest strike of teachers in 20 years. And I'm not exaggerating by saying, oh, the biggest debt, it was really the biggest, because Brazil was like, don't use it to this kind of thing. So now it's new, and really big. And these teachers were totally against the black bloc, because they are thinking the black bloc are attracting the police to beat them. They occupied the education secretary of Rio, and one day, and the black bloc was there, trying like to be part of this. And then one day the police, they are all seated down peacefully in front of the secretary, and police just came and beat everybody. And the black bloc on this day tried to protect the teachers from police, tried to get back to police. And the teachers noted that. And they also noted that these black blocs, actually, they are like students, they are their students. So they say, okay, man, these are our students, like, so, and they are trying to defend us from police. So what they did, they created the black profs, you know? And this is the most Brazilian thing that could happen. After the black profs, they created the tropa de prof, is like teacher's troop. That's like joke with tropa de choque, that's the anti-disturb police of Brazil. And they start to, then the media was lost again, say, okay, fuck, now they like the black bloc, what can we do? Then 2013 ended. With this scenario. And it was a big tension in the air, and everybody thinking what's going to happen in 2014. 2014 started with this important demonstration. This was these are the street cleaners of Rio. To be a street cleaner is like the lowest official job you can have, because you are collecting garbage from the street. So people treat them as garbage. And actually this banner say, we are being treated like garbage. And they went to the street outside of the union, because the union is totally sold out to the government, and to say, we want better conditions of work. And the government first, they let Copacabana and all the beautiful beaches 1 week without garbage collection. So you can imagine the amount of garbage and shit that was on the street. And the middle class, you can expect them gonna hate this strike. But what was like new, this is also new, is that the middle class was not hating these people. They went to the street during the demonstration and was clapping, saying like, beautiful, you know. And this got like the government and the media totally lost. And then the government that was threatening to just fire a lot of these workers just went back and they accepted some of the conditions they were asking for, not all, but some. And then they went out of strike. And it was like a victory, and it was like a new situation where like the poor working class was like being supported by the middle class, you know. I don't know what to think about that, but I think it was like new. And then the popular committee of the World Cup, what we did in São Paulo, we organized in December, before the 2013 end, the first Rebel Cup. This area, all this area, is like you can see how big it is. It was the bus station of the city until the 80s. Then on the 80s was demolished, was deactivated because they built a bigger one. And was transformed in a popular like street vendors shopping. On the end of the 90s, they demolished everything. No, sorry. On the beginning of the 2000s, they demolished everything. And they plan to build here a dance hall. This is downtown. Around this area, there's a lot of drug addicts. This area is known as crackland, because there's a lot of crack. These things here, you can see, are all like tents of homeless people. And this is a poor neighborhood with a lot of occupied buildings, a lot of poor people. And they want to build this dance hall. Because this area is downtown, they have tried to gentrificate this for 20 years now. And they already made one old train station, they made it like opera house. So now it will be the dance hall, and this is like trying to send people away. But they demolish everything, and the justice, somebody investigated and saw that the company that was hired to demolish the things were like related to the mayor, the government, I don't know. They stopped the building because of the corruption, some illegal contracts. And this became like empty for years. The community of this neighborhood, they just went inside, they just made a hole in the fence, enter inside, and they built two pairs of goals. And they started to play football there every weekend. So some of these people are part of this popular committee. We went there and we are like talking to them and say, what about making an alternative football tournament and inviting all the social movements of the city? And so that's what we did, like in December, was the first Rebel Cup, and got together 32 social movements and collectives of the city. It was a really nice moment because it was a moment of getting this network of movements, this coalition of movements, even more stronger. Beyond playing football. I think there's another photo. This is another photo of the football. And then these are some of the teams. And then like this claim made a lot of attention from the media too. So when the year started, 2014, this other group called "If No Right, If There Is No Right, There Will Be No Cup," they used this slogan. That just emerged from the streets in 2013, that is like, Não vai ter Copa, there will be no Cup. They used this slogan to start calling demonstrations against the World Cup. But they are a lot of black blocs and a lot of small left-wing parties that has like these old left-wing discourses and speeches about like the Trotskyists and Marxists, the old same bullshit. And they are thinking that just to calling people to the street like what we'll like repeat what happened in 2013. But that is not true. In 2013 was very special condition, and this first demonstration got just like 5,000 people. The popular committee was there. We are not being part of this because we are like disagreeing of some. This guy didn't have any strategy. He just put people on the street with no like escape route, no like real demands. What are you demanding? Like rights? I want rights. Which rights? How? Like, you know, they didn't. They are just like, it's almost a fetish. Let's go to the street and like, this is gonna make the there will be no World Cup with this movement. And then there are just 5,000 people, and police use this to train. One guy got shot twice with real bullet, one in the chest, one in the leg. He didn't die, But this started to create a fear atmosphere on the city. Everybody was like fearing the violence of the black blocs, the violence of police and everything. In Rio, another thing happened. One guy that media, of course, and police claim to be a black bloc, but this guy was not in black and not with the cover face, tried to fire a firework against the police and hit this cameraman on the head. And this cameraman died. So now the black blocs are officially terrorists, officially a dangerous group. So this was creating this fear atmosphere on the country because of the World Cup. And police, these beautiful guys here, got $1 billion of money to buy new guns and new training. They got guns from Israel, they got guns from Germany, they got trained by Germany and France anti-disturb police and by the Mossad. Brazil government, the federal government that's supposed to be left, they create the new security force called like National Security Force. It was the biggest and more strong and martial art policemen from all the country with this amount of money, and from these beautiful uniforms they had, they before the World Cup, during and after the World Cup, they become this. This was the official presentation of their new uniform, and the media called that Robocop. You know, I don't know this if this is a coincidence or not, but this year, like the movie Robocop was refilmed, remaked. And the director is a Brazilian director. And this is the Robocop of the movie. You know, I think he was inspired on this. I don't know, but it's similar, you know. And then, on February, police, the second demonstration, this group, this with no rights, no cup, they called people for a new demonstration and was even less people because then the fear was totally in the streets. And the police used this demonstration to train one thing they learned with the Hamburg police. It's Hamburg cattling. It's this. Like surrounding people and letting them inside for hours, you know? They did that in São Paulo too. This is like comparison. And on this demonstration, they managed to book, not to arrest, but to book on police more activists than the whole year of 2013. So by this moment, the social movements that has a little bit of perspective and analysis of what was happening, said, okay, we have to change strategies because this is being used just to train the police. There's no use to go to the street to be beaten by police and police use us to train. So we start to think about other ways of claiming attention of the media for the World Cup without being used by police to train. So we did the second Rebel Cup in April. And we did, this means like in São Paulo, just love is not enough. And because there's this new, like this, love is everything, and more love, please more love. And it's like hipster movement, you know? And then we did, this is also Rebel Cup with all the flags on the back. And we did also this public shaming of Brazilian Football Federation president. This guy is an ex-deputy from the dictatorship. He is directly responsible for the death of Vladimir Herzog. He's an important journalist. Under dictatorship, this guy was murdered. And the police tried to make that suicide. And just like 2 years ago, the government, Brazilian government finally excused himself with the family and paid the indemnization for the death because it was obviously a murder, not a suicide. Like they say he got suicide, and the photo of the cell of the suicide is he has like this belt on the neck to the window, but this like the distance from the window to the ground was smaller than his height. How can you suicide if you cannot like jump or like throw your body because there's the floor, you know? So it was so bad stage that finally they recognized. It's important to know, like, this year Brazil was, like, the 50th anniversary of the starting of the dictatorship, and Brazil never judged the generals and the dictators. It's the only country in South America that got amnesty for both sides. So the amnesty for, like, the left-wing or the group that fought against the dictatorship, and they also amnesty to the people that torture and kill generals. So we never got anyone, like, blamed for what happened. And this was a public shaming in front of his house, and this caught a lot of attention from the media too. And we say like this cup of the dead, because we had 13 workers dead building the stadiums. 13. So when May come, we try to do a new demonstration with all these social movements. With 15 minutes, police attacked everybody, and one girl almost lost the sight of the one eye again. And then was this really violent atmosphere, and the only movement that managed to do a big demonstration before the World Cup was this movement. This is the MTST. It's not the MST that you probably know. That's the peasants' movement. This is the MTST, the biggest urban movement of São Paulo, of Brazil. It's called, translating would be like Movement of the Workers Without a Roof. So it's a housing movement. And they managed together, they managed alone to put 15,000 people on the street. So what they did, 1 month to the World Cup, they don't have any link with any party. So they are kind of direct action movement. 1 month for the World Cup, they started occupying buildings and occupying empty lands. And they forced the government to negotiate with them. The bad thing is that they accept negotiation. So they occupy this land like 1 kilometer away from the stadium. And they named this land like People's World Cup, the name of the land. And they negotiated with the government, and the government said, okay, you can have the land. And then they say, okay, we are stopping the demonstrations. So they got big demonstrations until like 1 week to the World Cup starts, because then the government accepted the negotiation. And they are like, this is the bad thing about them. They don't have any link with any party, but they accept to negotiate. And when they got what they asked for, they just stop. I don't really judge this, because I was never in a condition of not having a house. I don't know how true it is not to have a house. So I think they are doing their movement, but they could be more solidarious with other movements, but still is a really important movement in Brazil nowadays. And this is a photo of São Paulo subway in a normal day. International rules say that you can have at most 4 people by square meter on subways. This is international rules. In São Paulo, on the rush hour, we have 12 people by square meter. I don't even know how it's possible to put 12 people. I already did on the ground, like, to see, and I don't know how. Even 12 skinny people like me, I don't know how 12, but okay, this is the statistics. And this is crowded, expensive, and the workers has a lot of work, a lot of job, and get a little payment. So they went on strike. And once more, was the biggest strike in 20 years. And it was a strike also outside of the union. This is another important thing on Brazil. Historically, all the unions are sold out to the governments, and almost all the social movements are linked to political parties. Now, it's the first time now we are having a lot of these workers and social movements saying fuck off to the union and to the party, and creating autonomous, independent movements inside these classes. So this is important and is new. These guys went on strike for 3 days, and when was just 3 to the start of the World Cup, the union negotiated with the government, and they got out of strike officially. But there are still some of the workers saying, "Okay, we don't give a fuck about the union negotiation. We're gonna continue on strike." And then what the governor did, because the subway is like governor responsibility, not city hall, what he did is just firing 43 people. So when the World Cup, on the day the World Cup started, and it was in São Paulo, June 12, we organized this big demonstration against the firing of these 43 workers. And there was a lot of social movements together, what's also one thing not new but hard to do in São Paulo. And we are in front of the union of these workers, subway workers, and the idea was to get out of here and go like walk 1 kilometer until on the direction of the stadium. But we didn't want to go to the stadium, just like near and then go back. But what police did was like doing a line on this side of the block and another line on the other side of the block. So they did, okay, you can demonstrate on this block. If you try to move, we're gonna attack. And then there was like some people wanted to obey the police, some people don't want to obey the police. the union hating the black blocs hating the union, and then they tried to break the police line, and police attacked it, and there was a lot of rubber bullets and tear gas, and this journalist from CNN was wounded, and this image also went viral in the world, like CNN journalist attacked by police in Brazil opening day of the World Cup. And there was like also more, at least 20 people, they are not illuminated journalists or just regular people that got injured too. And what police did, they were blocking the ambulances. So we are calling ambulances and they didn't let the ambulance pass. And we are trying to get then these people out. We were giving them the first aid, first medical car, and then trying to bring them to the hostel with our own private cars, and police didn't let us pass. They are saying, the only way these people are getting out is in police car. And we don't trust them very much, so we are in this bad situation. And after like 1 hour and a half, police finally liberated everybody and everybody went home. Actually, the black blocs didn't went home. They continued marching from through the city and destroying things everywhere, and the police were attacking them everywhere, but was really distant to the stadium, so nobody said anything. On this atmosphere, on this level of police repression, we had to bet on other strategies, like I said, and we did. On the same time of the World Cup, on the day the World Cup started, we also started this favela cup on the last favela of downtown. So this was the first day. Beside the football game, we also had this bowling for kids, people we don't like Ronaldo, Avalanche, Blatter, Valky, and police, of course, and FIFA. And we didn't have many demonstrations during the World Cup in São Paulo. The only big one that happened, some groups tried to do, and sorry, the housing movements did demonstrations. Basically, one really good thing they did was they occupied the house. It's not a house, not store. How you say, like, the construction company office. They occupied this Odebrecht office, you know, to denounce that this Odebrecht was profiting with everything, blah, blah, blah. And they did some demonstrations, but none were really big. The only big one was this one, called by the Passe Livre movement. And Passe Livre means free pass. In São Paulo subway and bus, we have this thing, this turnstile, this block. You know, you cannot just go there. You have to pay and just turn the turnstile. And they called this demonstration together with the popular committee of the World Cup on June 19, when like England and Uruguay was playing on the city. And this, we managed to bring this demonstration until the end to the biggest autobahn of the city. And there we like burned some turnstiles and also jumped some of them. I was like, in June in Brazil, there we have this like June, we call like this June party. It's a cultural celebration. Remounts to the peasants when June was the moment to the harvest, you know, to collect the things they planted. And then there was this celebration with a lot of food. And this still happens until today. And one of the games you do on these parties is jump the fire. So we did that. And we also did the third edition of the Rebel Cup, this time on the biggest autobahn of São Paulo. We just draw the pitch on them. And we managed to play two games until the police come. And I have to do this. It's a little auto promotion, but I happened that I scored the first goal of the autobahn. So it's an honor, you know. And then like police come and we left, and when we are lefting, the black blocs start to destroy everything, but this time they were like doing a good job because it was just on the end of the demonstration. They didn't let the police use them to attack everybody, so they did just on the end, so nobody got arrested, nobody got injured, and a lot of banks and cars, stores got destroyed, so it was nice. And on July 6th, like 1 week for the final, we did the fourth edition of the Rebel Cup on the same land of the other two, besides this one on the autobahn. And in this time we did this like pool with the population of the neighborhood, asking what do you want to be built on this land. And the idea is like to try to create a plan of what they want on this land. I think the most of the answer was like we want houses. So, and the idea is to show the government that a dance hall is not useful in this area. And this is an image of this area, like this neighborhood. This is the one old occupied building. When I say occupied building, it's not a kind of occupied building we have here in Europe. There, who occupy the buildings are like families, you know. It's like, it's really to live. And it's, of course, it's political occupation, but it's not an ideological occupation, you know. It's like just, they just want a basic need, that's house. And this is like the building when they occupy it. This is now. All the reform was done by them. And they, after 7 years, they managed to get on justice the right to stay there. So this is one victory. It doesn't have to do with the World Cup struggle, but it's one victory. And we also have a lot, if you go to São Paulo right now, you're going to look find a lot of occupied buildings with banners like this, you know. And the movement, the housing movement, do you know this Monty Python movement, The Life of Brian, when they have like this Free Palestine Front, the Front for Freedom of Palestine, Freedom Front of Palestine, you know, and everyone that has three people, is the same, the housing movement. They fight between themselves, and then you have like 12 different movements with like just change one letter from the side. And we have like four big centrals, that four big different coalitions of movements, and a lot of them are linked to parties. But now, after this all this World Cup process, one good legacy is that some of them got independent from every party, you know. And they are doing a lot of things together with the anarchists and autonomous groups in the city. So before it was like autonomous anarchists, middle class people that doesn't have any really need in life and do this ideological struggle. No, really, man. Like, I think basic needs. And do this ideological struggle. On the other hand, we have the social movements that have a lot of needs, but that doesn't care about ideology, just want to have their needs. And now we have a little, they are meeting, you know. So these social movements are getting a little bigger perspective, and the middle class anarchists and autonomous movement are getting a little more reality, you know. So it's like, it's nice, it's a good moment for the social struggle in São Paulo. And you have, it's 12 million people, really big city, and I think this kind of coalition and networks is necessary. The idea we have is to try to create this independent force with a lot of social movements that can be a reference to the population. So I don't know, if the government has this new plan, what this coalition thinks about this, you know? To be a reference, independent reference, that not media or the own government, about things. On south of Brazil, in Porto Alegre, they have this. They have different history there. The south of Brazil has like history of German, Italian, and Polish immigration. And instead of like big, one farmer with big part of a big amount of lands, they have like the smaller land. So it's like more, the inequity, the difference between rich and poor is a little bit smaller. And this tradition of the workers to fight for rights that are bigger than other parts of the country. So to São Paulo, this is a new reality, I think it's important. And this coalition extends now even to these indigenous groups. This is one, we have this indigenous settlement in São Paulo, and during the World Cup, there were two movements. One from the government trying to evict everybody they could, because all the focus of the media was on the games. And the other side, from the housing movements, they're trying to occupy everything they can because the focus of the police was on the games. So they are trying, it was like, on the end, it was a balance, you know. And they try to evict this indigenous settlement. It's the only urban area, I don't know, not the only, but one of the last urban area settlement of indigenous in São Paulo. And they try to evict them, but we got to make, with all the rebel clubs, all the meetings, all the things we did, we got to make everybody go there and stop police to do the eviction, and the one judge give them the right to stay there. This is still on justice going, but for now they are still there. And they have this big campaign now asking for the ministry to do the demarcation of their lands, not just in São Paulo, in the whole Brazil. And finally, almost finally, this is probably the issue we had the less victories and the less amount of information and the less strength to fight for, is the sexual exploitation, sexual networks of women and kids. Brazil is a country with a lot of exploitation of women and kids for prostitute networks or like sexual like tourists in the country. During the World Cup, of course, this thing gonna be bigger. Even Adidas knew that, you know. They did these beautiful t-shirts, it's from Adidas. stimulating sex tourism, and then Brazilian government protested against and they took it out. But we tried to do the Brazil government since 2011 to create a real project of avoiding these networks of sexual exploitation, to get women and kids from their houses. Many of them are slaver, like traffic of human traffic. A real project to do this. And 1 month of the World Cup, they finally did one pamphlet to put in hostels, in hotels, saying to tourists what not to do, you know. But this is not a real project to stop this shit. And what happened is, like, during the World Cup, the denounces of sexual abuse or sexual exploitation from 524, that is the average of every month, go to 740. And if you think this is only the cases that are denounced, and this is probably not even one third of the real cases, so you can imagine how much this increased in Brazil. There are this independent journalist website that did this investigation, and they show how this mafia works. And this involves government people, politicians, police people. So it's really strong mafia, you know, the traffic people, traffic woman, basically. So this is probably our biggest fight now, because we don't really have information, don't really have strength to fight against that. When one day for the final in Rio, police just arrested or tried to arrest 23 activists in Rio. They choose one from each organization to send a clear message saying, okay, if you don't stop, we're going to arrest one from each one. And this girl here, her nickname is Sininho. It's something like, from Peter Pan, like Tinkerbell. She was accused by media and was covered of all magazines, all journals, to being the leader of everything. She was the leader of Black Blogs, leader of everything. And of course she's not. She's just a middle-class university student and nothing to do with, like, everything. So they accused her, and she's still being persecuted, and they arrested 23 people, or tried to. And this leads us to the final of this presentation. That's what's the legacy of this shit for the country. And I think this is, like, this is happening all around the world. Under theoretically democratic state that's going to have elections in October now, we had a really militarized reality on the urban, on the cities. So now the police is even more violent. We are talking about a police that has, in the last 5 years, São Paulo police killed more people than the whole police of the United States together. So this Ferguson thing on the United States to São Paulo is just daily life, you know. And this woman, she is a lawyer, and she was defending these activists of Rio. And she was one of the 23 arrested. But before being arrested, she ran to the Uruguay embassy and asked for political asylum. And Uruguay, and that's why I say this democratic state bullshit, they said, we cannot give you asylum because you are not a political persecuted person yet. And Brazil is a democratic state. We have diplomatic relationships with them. We cannot accept a political persecution from Brazil. Understand? So this is obviously a political persecution by constitution, by crime law. You can't arrest people that did no crime. You can arrest people just with crimes. Brazil government reopened intelligence section of police and army. We are lucky now that they are not that intelligent yet. On this arrest, for example, one of the arrested women was teacher, university teacher, and she did a lot of quotes in Facebook about Bakunin. And on the police report, the police said, we got a lot of quotes of this Mikhail Bakunin guy. This guy seems to be dangerous. We have to keep an eye on him. You know? So they don't really know that Bakunin is already dead. Actually, under the dictatorship, but just to compare, under the dictatorship, Karl Marx had a file on the political police. So you can, and the other funny history is, like, under the dictatorship, there was this theater, like this play of Sophocles, you know, the Greek philosopher. Was a play about one of his books or poems, I don't know. And police just went to this theater and wanted to arrest this Sophocles guy as a subversive, you know. And man, but the thing is that they are activating these intelligence sectors of the repressive forces in the country under this democratic state, beautiful thing. Then, 10 days after the World Cup of the final in São Paulo, these two guys got arrested. This guy is like kind of bizarre. He says stupid things like, oh, police did a good job. And he claims that he already fought with the Sandinists. And he claimed a lot of bullshit. And we suspect that or he is like just crazy, stupid, or he like undercover cop, we don't know. But this guy is a real activist, and they stayed 45 days in jail. Their crime was to have suspicious products on the backpack on the demonstration. They got arrested. They were lucky that they got arrested in an area with a lot of people. So everybody was filming the arresting. And they proved that they had nothing on the backpack. But police took 45 days to do analysis of what they had on the backpack. And in the end, they said this analysis said that neither the chips or the yogurt could be dangerous. You know, they had chips and yogurt on the backpack. So they took 45 days. Why? When they got arrested, it was these scandals. They got arrested for nothing. So the police say, okay, maybe we don't have proof. They tried to stage some proofs, but they didn't manage. So what they did, they waited 45 days to get these cases out of media. And then they released these people, and nobody even remember. But we did a website for this guy, like it was Freedom for Hideki. And on this website, we did a lot of denounces of situations like him. And this is the end of the presentation I did. This website is the website of the National Articulation of the Popular Committees. And here we have articles in English, in Spanish, in German, in French, and in Portuguese. And this is my mail, if anyone wants more information or keep in contact. And the idea of this talk and all the talks I did here in Europe is to raise some money for now, especially this guy, but to all the other guys, a lot of them are being prosecuted by the state. So they still have to go to the court to answer, and they have to pay lawyers and pay a lot of shit. So all the money we are trying to raise, and not just me, there are other people doing that too, is to this situation now, to get a stronger juridical support on these cases.